This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Carlton Fisk joins us, the Hall of Fame catcher. He played 24 seasons in the majors, 11 with the Boston Red Sox, 13 with the Chicago White Sox, an 11-time All-Star, and he caught more games than any other player in Major League Baseball history. Carlton, when I see that 24 years split between two teams, I kind of laugh a little bit. That's not what you'll find, generally speaking, in baseball today. Do you kind of smile a little bit that you were able to do that between two teams?
Well, I am smiling a little bit. You know, it's a testament to my my intestinal fortitude, for sure. But people just don't realize that I played that many years in Chicago. People think that I just finished up my career in Chicago and spent the majority of it in Boston. But I don't know if anybody's ever crazy enough to catch as long as I did. I don't think there'll be any more of those crazy people in the near future, for sure.
Were you always a catcher, even as a kid playing baseball?
Well, when I was in high school, I was sort of the athlete, you know, the BMOC. I was the guy who could throw the hardest, so I was a pitcher for most of the time. And the time that I didn't pitch, I played shortstop because I was the athlete on the team. But the funny part about it was that a lot of people don't recognize that I grew up in a little small town in New Hampshire, maybe 900 people when I grew up. So Charlestown High School, we just played 12 games a year in our high school baseball schedule. And usually two or three of them would be weathered out. And I can remember going down basically it was a cow pasture, but it was our baseball field. And we used to have to chop off the ice on the third base side to get the season started. So every year when I go to Cooperstown, after Cooperstown, I head out to my mom and dad's place out in New Hampshire. And my dad's 93 and my mom's 87, and so I go back there, and I just marvel at the fact that this is where I came from, and I just was at the Hall of Fame ceremonies. And here I am hanging on the wall in the Hall of Fame. So every time I go home, I just shake my head going, how did this ever happen?
At what point did it get serious with you? And what I mean by that, at what point did you say, hey, maybe I'd like to play this game professionally?
Oh, that's a good question, because when I was growing up, I went to the University of New Hampshire on a basketball scholarship, and I thought, sure, that I was going to grow to be 6'7", and I was going to be a power forward for the Celtics. And basketball was my love, my game. I loved that game more than baseball at the time. But, things didn't work out, and as we were growing up, we've always had our home run derby contests in the backyard, and we were always the Red Sox home run derby against the Yankees home run derby. So it didn't work out in basketball, but it sure worked out in baseball, and I'm really fortunate and happy about that.
One of the things that I remember, Carlton, when I was working in Boston as a sportscaster, I had never worked in that part of the country, and the only thing I feared was the fact that I would give a Boston Red Sox batting average that was off by 1/100th of a point.
Oh, and you would hear about it.
Yeah, exactly.
People there know they're Red Sox. They know their baseball, and in a way that's great, and in a way that's the best part of them, and in a way that's the worst part of them, is that you go there and there is no let up. There is no, there's no in between. It's black or white. There's no gray area when it comes to the Red Sox fans.
And I would hear about it. I'd get letters from every little old lady all the way up to the state of Maine. As a kid, tell me about the first time you went into Fenway Park.
Well, it was really weird. I was, like I said, in a little small town in New Hampshire, and there was a little bird dog up there named Bert Stewart who happened to, recognize that I was the, athlete of the area, you might say. And I was invited down to the Fenway Park to just take pre-game or pre-batting practice. And I went down there, and I remember there was George Thomas was there, and Russ Gibson, and all these guys were there, and we had some, we were hitting balls all over the place during the game or during the pre-game, and at the time I couldn't hit the left field wall. I was hitting the ball off the center field wall, off the right center field wall, and at that time I never pulled a ball. But as you get older and you get stronger, get more knowledgeable, the left field wall became quite a friend. And in times, quite an enemy, because there's balls that I would hit off that wall, the line drive that's off the top of the wall that would be a home run in any other ballpark. So it became quite a friend and quite a, not an enemy so much, but, you know, an adversary sometimes.
One of the things I always found interesting, Carlton, in talking to a lot of players, they said that it was kind of like a mental block to some degree. You'd look at that wall being so close and say, I could hit that every time I put the bat on the ball, but yet it would work against you. Is that something that does work against the hitter when they see something like that?
I think as a team, the Red Sox, I mean, and their pitching staff, you can almost bank on that guys are going to want to come into this ballpark and try to pull the ball. And when they try to, when they demonstrate that, boy, they're just our outs. I can remember when Dick Allen came in back in the 70s, and he came in the first couple times in, the first time in, he was 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, trying to hit that wall. And the second time in, he was 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, and 0-3. And the last time up, he comes up to the ball, up to the plate, and just bangs his bat on the plate, and he says, "The hell with that left field wall." And he hits the ball so far over the center field wall that I think he's wondering why he ever thought about the left field wall, because he hit a ball over the exit in center field in Fenway Park, and that's just a bomb.
How mind-bending was that left field wall for the pitchers that came in from other teams? And then also, if you had a young pitcher on the Red Sox team, what did you try to do to get them to forget about that?
Well, I think what a lot of people fail to realize is that if you can get a knock a hitter off the plate, the ball inside is the most important pitch in Fenway Park, because then he's pulling away and he's pulling around a ball, and when you swing around a ball, you're just going to hit lazy ground balls to the left side or lazy fly balls to the middle of the infield. So we try to establish inside when I was there. And as a result, we made out pretty well, because our pitching staff was, almost a full run, earned run less in Fenway Park than it was outside of Fenway Park.
Carlton, when you played in Boston, and knowing the fans as I know them there, they're very intelligent and very articulate about the Red Sox in particular, baseball in general. How did that affect teams that came into Fenway Park? I know that every visiting team is going to get razzed, but it always seemed to me, as I was a sportscaster in Boston, that there was something about the Boston fans, and maybe it was because they were so articulate about the game, that it seemed to have a little bit of an edge for the opposing team against them.
Well, I'll tell you, the fans in Fenway Park really acknowledged the opposing team, not in a positive way, in a razzing type way, and especially when the Yankees came into town. Maybe not quite as intensely against other teams that were in the Eastern Division, but especially when the Yankees came into town, it was almost World Series atmosphere every day. And when the Red Sox went to the Yankee Stadium, that would be mirrored down there, because it was so intense when the Yankees played the Red Sox and the Red Sox played the Yankees that it was, it was draining. At the end of a 3 or 4 game series, it was just draining. But it also happened when Detroit came into town, when Cleveland came into town, when Baltimore came into town, but not quite as intensely as when the Yankees came into town.
You automatically gravitated to catching, as you said, but was it the mental aspect of it that you liked about that position?
I think that was it. The everyday involvement was what what I really, really enjoyed about it. When I was playing American Legion baseball, I was scouted, and there was the scout for the Pittsburgh Pirates that said that, I pitched in the American Legion, I played shortstop, and he said, "Well, you're athletic, and if you're ever going to make it to the big leagues, it'd probably be as a shortstop." But in the Red Sox organization, they had a need for catching, and they said, "Well, the quickest way to become the major leaguer would be is if you wanted to, became an accomplished catcher." So that's where I went, and that's where I ended up. So I ended up catching more games than anybody in the history of the game, and I don't know if that was overly smart, but I hold that record.
Did you think about the physical liability of that? I mean, when you reflect back on it, would you have done anything different from
absolutely
that standpoint?
Not. Absolutely not. Maybe I'd have got into my strength and conditioning program a little earlier, but catching was, you know, I felt as though that's where my biggest contribution to our team effort was behind the plate because, as you know, if your pitchers do well and hold the team down to the opposing team to one or fewer runs, then you've got a chance to win. So I always tried to do that.
Carlton Fisk, Hall of Famer, has joined us and you. He also is one of only eight people to have their uniform number retired by at least two teams. We continue with more of you in Sports Byline.